From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, October 7th. Today, a state independent oversight agency is receiving the final case files of four Maine children who died last year from alleged abuse or neglect. Maine's Department of Health and Human Services announced it was complying with a directive to turn over the confidential files to the agency, but the department is refusing to provide the files to lawmakers who issued a subpoena for them. Patty White reports.
In September, lawmakers on the Government Oversight Committee directed DHHS to provide the case files to the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability, or OPEGA. The committee also issued a subpoena for DHHS to hand over the confidential files to the committee itself. Its members argued that they need access for their own investigation into Maine's child protection system. But DHHS is objecting to the subpoena, and the state attorney general's office has notified the committee that releasing confidential records directly to lawmakers is a violation of state and federal law. The Government Oversight Committee will next meet on October 19th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Civil liberties advocates say President Biden's pardon of all people convicted of simple possession of marijuana symbolizes changing attitudes toward the drug, but they say more needs to be done. Megan Sway, policy director for the ACLU of Maine, says she's encouraged that the president is directing federal agencies to review how cannabis is scheduled under federal law. She says because cannabis is classified as a Schedule I drug, tenants in federally subsidized housing can still get kicked out for using it.
That's one example of the ways in which keeping it as a scheduled drug can still hurt people, even while Maine has moved away from that model of dealing with cannabis.
Biden also called on governors to pardon similar small cannabis convictions under state law. Sway says that while possession of small amounts of cannabis has been decriminalized in Maine for more than 40 years, the state can take further action, such as pardoning people with civil infractions or passing legislation so people don't have to disclose drug convictions on job and housing applications. The FBI this week released crime statistics it's collected about 2021. Erwin Gratz reports on Maine's results.
Among the statistics are numerical rankings of cities and towns across Maine. Portland, Maine's largest city, had the largest number of violent crimes, 152. Lewiston was second with 95, Biddeford third with 91, and Bangor fourth with 64. Bangor led the state in property crimes reported, 1,450. Portland was second with 1,200, Waterville third with 657, Auburn was fourth, Lewiston fifth. The FBI went to a new reporting system for 2021. As of last August, the Marshall Project found many police agencies around the country, including about half in Maine, had yet to report a full year of data. This week's FBI release says only three Maine communities, Millinocket, Richmond, and Searsport, had yet to submit 2021 data to the Bureau. Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
It's now time for Maine's Political Pulse, our weekly analysis of politics and government. This week, host Keith Shortall talked about the first gubernatorial debate with political reporters Steve Missler and Kevin Miller.
So lots to talk about this week. Let's start first with the showdown Tuesday night between the three candidates running for governor. Maine Public broadcast this 90-minute forum live from the Franco Center in Lewiston. It was a collaboration with the Portland Press Herald and the Lewiston Sun-Journal. And Steve, it was highly anticipated for any number of reasons, including the fact that it was maybe never a given that it would actually happen.
Yeah, you know, Keith, if you had asked me this summer if we would be able to get all three candidates on the same debate stage, I would have said fat chance, and I may have to some of our editors, but that's because candidates are increasingly risk averse. Campaigns would rather reach voters on their own terms, basically using ads or events that they can control. And then that's why they rarely hold press briefings during the heat of a campaign. And a debate is essentially a long press conference, albeit, controlled and a tad theatrical because of the TV component. And this debate was a long one, 90 minutes. That's a long time to take questions that can knock candidates off their talking points, There's a lot of opportunities to say something embarrassing or just wrong.
I guess what I'm wondering is his appearance in this particular debate possibly an indication that maybe polls were suggesting he's behind and needs to broaden his base?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a logical explanation, Keith. I mean, we don't know what the campaign's internal polls look like, but we have seen several public polls, and they suggest that Governor Janet Mills is leading LePage by double digits. If those are accurate, then LePage clearly needs to reach people outside of the conservative media bubble, and that means press conferences, which he has held, and debates, which he is doing. It's risky, as evidenced by the fallout from this week, but maybe necessary for him to be successful in November.
Kevin, the debate highlighted what's become a kind of a problem for GOP candidates nationwide who thought maybe not that long ago that they were about to witness a red wave in November. And the problem is the abortion issue, the Dobbs decision, which has kind of complicated the picture for them.
Yeah, it certainly has complicated things for them, both in Maine and around the country. You know, overturning Roe versus Wade was a top priority for the increasingly conservative Republican Party for years, you know, decades really. And then it finally happened. But that June decision by the Supreme Court kind of really handed Democrats a very powerful campaign issue this year. What I find interesting is it seems like abortion, you know, it's often portrayed, at least by Democrats and staunch defenders of abortion rights, as this black and white issue of you either support abortion or you don't. There's not a lot of gray area in the way it's often framed. But the reality, I think, is that many people both support keeping abortion legal and support reasonable restrictions on when and how it can happen. But kind of to your point, it seems like Republicans are having a harder time responding to that or maybe tapping into that gray area after Dobbs, because Democrats are having such success painting this as a either or situation. And I think we definitely saw that during the debate this week.
Yeah, I want to play a clip here. This is an exchange between LePage and Mills from Tuesday night, in which LePage becomes kind of flustered when he's answering a hypothetical question about whether, if elected, he would sign a bill or veto a bill that placed restrictions on abortion, specifically, for example, one that would prohibit abortions after 15 weeks instead of, as you said, Kevin, the 24 to 28 weeks. Here is that exchange.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure I understand the question.
I understand the question. I would not let such law become effective. My veto pen will stand in the way of any restrictions on the right to abortion.
All right. Sam Hunkler.
When you say restriction, I'm trying to understand.
So Governor LePage, if the legislature came to you and said, we want to change Maine's law, and instead of viability, which currently stands at 28 weeks, now Maine's law is going to say no abortions after 15 weeks, would you veto that?
Yes.
So he lands on an answer, Kevin, there finally, which may have surprised some people, did surprise people. But what was the significance of that moment, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people picked up on how former Governor LePage was really struggling with the question. And, you know, to be honest, that it was a pretty straightforward question and something that should not have surprised him. We've been talking about viability and restrictions for many months now, and he's been asked about it numerous times. You know, so by LePage saying he was confused by the question, that gave Mills that great opening. She's the second voice we heard there. That gave Mills this great opening to jump in and say, I understand the question, and to repeat her stance that she would veto any attempt to oppose additional restrictions on abortion. You know, but what also received a lot of attention, as you mentioned, is that LePage responded yes to that question about whether he would veto a bill to ban abortions after 15 weeks. And that's the first time that we've heard him say that specifically.
Part of this is about leadership style, and it came up in the debate. And I'm imagining, I think we've talked about this, that LePage strategists are trying to sort of show him as a kinder, gentler version of the LePage that we saw when he was governor for 8 years. I want to play another clip from Tuesday night in which the candidates are asked to talk about their leadership style. Here And here's LePage's response.
It's very simple. I think, to be very honest with you and to be honest with the media, I think you've been a little bit unfair in how you've treated me over the last 8 years. But that aside, life is a journey, and you learn. Every day you grow and you learn. And I have learned an awful lot. My style is a far more laid back than you realize. Now, was I combative with the media? Yeah. I give what I get.
So, Steve, what do you take from that tone?
Well, I mean, I think he, you know, it's clear that Governor LePage has tried to soften his rhetoric, but is it working is the question. And I'm not sure that it is, Keith. I mean, his response to that question isn't exactly taking responsibility for his past actions. It's essentially blaming the press for previous problems, which, to be honest, is something he did during his first inauguration speech in 2011, when he said buying a newspaper is like paying someone to lie to you. Also, I think, you know, his transformation to LePage 2.0 or whatever you want to call it is pretty sudden. You know, that's not to say that he hasn't tried to soften his rhetoric and tone. I really think that he has. But that's not the only aspect of LePage's style that rubbed people the wrong way. And I think the debate illustrated that in some instances. That said, I mean, there are voters that have short memories, especially if they're unhappy with the incumbent on the ballot, Janet Mills. So maybe LePage's message this time is reaching those people.
That was Maine's Political Pulse. You can hear a longer discussion with the Pulse team every Friday through the election during Maine Calling. That's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow morning for Weekend Edition Saturday at 8 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet.